We've always been very bad at predicting the future. Don't believe me? Well, 67 years ago, the ABC asked Australians to do just that, and...
You all commute daily and hourly so fast through space in your private flying saucers.
Global peace and international harmony will be completely attained by the year 2000.
Yeah, still waiting on that world peace. I'm Matt Bevan, and from if you're listening, this is Black Swans, a series about the events we can't see coming, no matter how hard we try. It's available now on ABC Listen.
From Wurundjeri country, I'm Oliver Gordon. Today on The Breakfast Wrap, the coalition comes back together after a 17-day split. But a new news poll shows its primary vote at historic lows. We hear from Liberal Shadow Minister James McGrath.
I'm not going to sprinkle gold dust on a cow pat. The polling is dire. It is horrible. It is terrible. But speaking as a former campaign director, I'm not surprised it's this bad, because we've spent 3 weeks having a very public discussion talking about ourselves rather than focusing on the many failings of the Labor government.
And Nationals Deputy Leader Kevin Hogan on what's changed since the latest split.
In one of the things we've discussed over the last 2 weeks is a really defined set of protocols around how processes will work. Those processes didn't happen that week because of the rush nature of the legislation. There's great clarity around that, and I think that helps the relationship between the parties and the relationship between Susan and David.
From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Let's head straight to Sally Sara's interview with Liberal Shadow Minister James McGrath.
After 17 days, the Liberal and National parties have once again mended bridges, reforming the coalition after a messy split in January when three National senators broke shadow cabinet solidarity to vote against the government's hate speech laws. It's the second time that the coalition has broken up and reunited since the May election, with many spectators wondering how long it will last this time. James McGrath is the Shadow Special Minister for State and a Queensland Liberal National Party senator. He sits in the Liberals' party room and joins me now. Senator, welcome back to Breakfast.
It's good to be with you.
The latest news poll, has shown again increased support for One Nation. Has the coalition brand been damaged by all of this instability?
Of course it has. I'm not going to sprinkle gold dust on a cow pat. The polling is dire. It is horrible. It is terrible. But speaking as a former campaign director, I'm not surprised it's this bad, because we've spent 3 weeks having a very public discussion talking about ourselves rather than focusing on the many failings of the Labor government.
Are you angry about that?
Yes, of course I'm angry about that. I just spent the weekend going back home. I live out in the Darling Downs and wandering through the shops on Saturday. I had people I know coming up. Our people are angry because we've been talking about ourselves.
Who was responsible for this latest split? Was it the Liberals or the Nationals?
I don't know who was responsible. What I want us to do is, the past is the past. Let's try and learn from our mistakes and focus on the future and just focus on the Labor government. I realise I sound like a broken record at the moment, but that's what we've got to do. You know, I'm an old campaign director, and what you've got to do is, what are you good at and what are your opponents weak at? Well, our opponents are pretty weak at running the economy. We've got to put the attention back on them, and we've got to make sure that we stand for something. We've got to have a coalition that's based on our values of lower taxes, smaller and better government, less regulation, things like that. You know, giving the right, when I say the right of Australia, the aspirational class of Australia, those who want to get on, giving them hope. And we haven't been able to do that.
What got this reunification over the line this time, do you think?
I don't know what got it over the line, but what I do know is that my party members and supporters in Queensland, members of the Liberal National Party, were very forthcoming in their views that the coalition needed to be reformed. You guys in Canberra need to get your act together, because Labor are getting away with economic murder.
Did Susan Lee cave in to the Nationals, particularly this change of the suspension for the three National senators from a proposed 6 months down to 6 weeks? That's a big concession.
Concessions were given on all sides, and I think that is a good thing. There were no winners or losers out of the reformed coalition. What is important is the coalition has been reformed, that both sides, both different parties, understand the ramifications of the coalition going forward in terms of having protocols written down and all those types of things. But also, most importantly, going back to talking about Labor rather than us whittling on about ourselves.
Liberal Shadow Minister James McGrath. Let's stay with the reunification of the coalition.
Kevin Hogan is the Nationals' deputy leader and joins me in our Parliament House studio. Kevin Hogan, welcome back to Breakfast.
Good morning, Sally.
On the day that the Nationals announced the split, David Littleproud had this to say.
We cannot be part of a shadow ministry under Susan Lee.
What's changed?
Well, Sally, I was with David when he did that presser in Brisbane, and the question before that was around the context that Susan at the time was saying that our senators who'd crossed the floor on the hate speech laws could not come back, and they'd have to turn, you know, that was it, they were out. So that was unacceptable to us because it was a party position. So in the context of the fact that Susan was not going to let our senators come back into their shadow cabinet positions that we couldn't serve under her, that's changed in the sense that our shadow cabinet members now are.
Was that corrected, that statement? Well, it was taken a different way.
Well, it was taken a different way, but it was in the context of that. And I was doing interviews that morning, and it has said and said that, that was in the context of that. And I think from our perspective, it was always in the context of that.
Susan Lee backed down and changed the ban on the three National senators from 6 months to 6 weeks. What have the Nationals given in return?
We have taken time out of shadow cabinet and, you know, had not had those positions, those titles and the things that go with that for the last few weeks. So we, as a matter of principles, resigned because we didn't view our senators should without it being a collective. So, you know, we've foregone things because of that.
But what's the concession you've given in these negotiations? Because that was already the case, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, I mean, it's for others to judge. But, you know, we have obviously taken a hit in the sense that we walked away from shadow cabinet, walked away from the things that come with that. And I suppose...
But that was a decision you made rather than... That wasn't a concession to the Liberal Party?
Well, yeah, I suppose. Well, yeah, I suppose you could say we're still doing that for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
So that's the concession?
Well, you can view that as you wish. But, you know, we had a principled position. We stood by that. The important part for us was the senators should never have been punished in any way or taken a hit in any way that the whole of the shadow cabinet of the Nationals didn't take because it was a party room decision.
How long can the Lee-Littleproud relationship last in the leadership?
The one good thing about this is in one of the things we've discussed over the last 2 weeks is a really defined set of protocols around how, you know, processes will work. Those processes didn't happen that week because of the rush nature of the legislation. There's great clarity around that, and I think that helps the relationship between the parties and the relationship between Susan and David.
The latest news poll show the Nationals' primary vote is sitting at 3%. One Nation's is 27%. Is it clear that your party is going in the wrong direction or not connecting with voters right now?
Well, Sally, that's a really distorted figure. And why I say that is that figure comes across 150 electorates from around the country. And as Nationals, we only stand in about 20 to 30 seats. So we don't run in any city seats. There's a lot of cities we wouldn't poll at all. We'd poll zero in Wentworth. We'd poll zero in Coogong. We'd poll zero in Perth because we don't stand candidates there. But where we have incumbent seats, like my seat or my Nationals colleagues, our primary vote obviously would be in the 40s or 30s, in some cases the 50s, because we're the incumbent, we're known there, the Nationals brand is known there. So the National polling figure is always a gross distortion for us.
Nationals Deputy Leader Kevin Hogan. Let's take a deeper look at these new news poll figures with RN Breakfast political correspondent Mel Clark.
They show a continuation of the trend that we've seen across successive polls, across different polling companies, and now a trend that has been growing over several months. But this shows a new reach or a new nadir, depending on your view. It's showing that the coalition's primary vote is down to 18%. That compares to where they were at the last election. So less than a year ago on polling day, they had a primary voter of 31.8%. So basically 32% dropped down to 18% today. These are dire figures. One Nation's vote at the last election, a bit over 6%, is now at 27% on this latest news poll. Now, you heard James McGrath when you asked him about those figures. He's an LNP senator. He's previously been a state director, so he's run election campaigns. He's very knowledgeable and experienced in campaigning. He's describing them as dire, as terrible. He's saying he doesn't want to contemplate what it would look like if that were replicated at the next election. Others certainly are doing the calculations. Jane Hume, who is a senior Liberal who is currently sitting on the backbench, a Victorian, she's given a very emotional interview on Sky News this morning saying that these polling figures show that something has to change and change quickly. This is a very strong message from someone who has authority in the party. She has unfavourably compared the current period of the Liberal Party to Peter Dutton's leadership, which, given the election result, was regarded as not terribly successful. But she was pointing out that they haven't even announced any policy positions in the last couple of months, which Peter Dutton had nonetheless put forward ideas and values for the party. She has called on the leaders in the party who hold formal positions. She said, if you've got a rabbit, now's the time to pull it out of the hat. She's saying if they don't, the Liberal Party will be wiped out if this result is replicated at an election.
This is disastrous for the Liberal Party. It's disastrous for the coalition. Unless something changes, we will be wiped out. I've been looking at the numbers, just running a ruler over the pendulum. And I don't think that at this point there will be a single member of the House of Representatives from Victoria. There won't be a single member of the House of Representatives from New South Wales. Something has to give.
So I think you can hear a fair bit of emotion if you listen carefully to that audio of Jane Hume on Sky. She was, there's a bit of a shake in her voice. She was very angry in giving that interview, and I think that gives you a sense of the depth of feeling there. So, Sally, that probably leaves the question then, well, what does this mean for Susan Lee's leadership? Now, Susan Lee has been speaking this morning as well. She's acknowledging the results of this news poll, but she is trying to suggest that this reunification of the Liberals and the Nationals is something of a turning point.
I think they looked at the disunity and the back and forwards, and they marked us down because they saw us talking about ourselves. But yesterday, we drew a line under that. We said we've resolved our differences, we've strengthened our processes, they're even better going forward.
So that was Susan Lee speaking this morning. Look, Susan Lee's position is very tenuous right now. If there is to be a challenge, there's really two things you need to see. Someone needs to have the numbers and they need to have a trigger. Now, Angus Taylor, if he wants a clear win and clear air, he needs a decent margin. It's not clear that he has the numbers for a clear margin yet. So the question is, does he want to try and go with a narrow victory, or do these results push a few people who might be wavering about whether or not a leadership spill is the right idea? Could this kind of result push people to support a spill? And then there's the question of the trigger. Now, Susan Lee effectively dealt with one potential trigger, which would have been the failure to reunite the two parties. That would have been a reason Angus Taylor might have been able to give the public for a spill. But nonetheless, this dire polling result on its own is a trigger that Angus Taylor could utilise, that he could use to try and persuade the people was necessary if he was to try to move Susan Lee from the leadership either this week or in the next sitting of Parliament.
RN Breakfast political correspondent Mel Clark. Next, Changing Australia and the story of mental health organisation Farm Angels.
Droughts, floods, fires, so many Australian farmers have seen it all. And while they are resilient, the financial and mental toll on many farming families can't be underestimated. When Natasha Johnston kept hearing about people on the land struggling during a drought more than a decade ago, she and a friend started a fundraising campaign. They thought their backyard operation would only last a few months, but today it is a national organisation providing mental wellbeing and crisis support for thousands of Australian farmers. Natasha Johnston is the founder and director of Farm Angels and is my guest today on Changing Australia. And Natasha, welcome to you.
Thanks, Sally. It's great to be here with you.
You grew up on the outskirts of Brisbane and your parents farmed on the Darling Downs. How much of those experiences were very formative for you as a kid and a young person?
Oh, they were. They've made me who I am today. You know, growing up in, I guess I had the best of both worlds, city and country living. So having 40 acres back in Brisbane in those days, and then having the farm life as well. It was just, it helped me understand farming life and the challenges that come from farming life, I guess, growing up as a kid on the farm.
And often in these family farm businesses, the kids are not entirely insulated from what's going on. Sometimes parents are trying to protect them from the financial reality, but kids know. They know what's going on.
Oh, absolutely. My parents were very proud, and still, well, my dad passed away, but mum's still with us. Very proud people. And, you know, as a kid, they hid a lot from us. It wasn't when I got to my later teens is when I really discovered what was going on for my parents. There was, you know, financial impacts, high interest rates, struggling to put food on the table. It was a real challenge.
What were some of the little things that you noticed, particularly as a teenager, when you had more insight into the situation, the things that were missing, the things that were being foregone, things that were being stretched longer than usual to get by, Natasha?
Yeah, it was actually, well, my mum had to went back to work, and she was doing double shifts nursing. Mm. So I wasn't seeing a lot of mum. Even though I was away at boarding school, when I was home, you know, I was noticing mum was really cranky, really stressed, arguing all the time. And then, you know, dad was the one making the meals for us, you know, and mum was always the cook. So, you know, dad was very limited with what he could cook. He learnt to cook very quickly. But, you know, it was one night that my mum had a massive breakdown on the kitchen floor and wanted to take her life because she was working 6 days a week, 18 hours a day, just to keep the food on the table, the bills paid, and the banks from coming and taking everything.
How old were you roughly when you saw that?
I was about 19, 20 at that stage, yeah.
Had you ever seen your mum in that kind of state of distress before?
No, not like that. That's something that, I think it's always stayed with me. I always say it's almost burnt into my retinas. You know, she just was beside herself. And it just all got too much. You know, I remember she was actually cooking dinner that night, and she just sort of threw everything through the spatula and just threw it and just screamed and broke down. And, you know, I think maybe I was asking a question or something, and it was a snap. It was just that little final thing that broke her back.
So you had these very powerful personal experiences. So later you're in Chinchilla, working in a cafe in Chinchilla, and there was an intense drought throughout much of Queensland. When did these ideas start kind of fermenting for you about taking what you knew and trying to help people who might be in trouble?
Yeah, it was obviously working in the cafe, we were hearing stories about the drought. I was seeing them on Facebook and I was sharing it, trying to make my friends in the city understand actually how bad it was. But there was one story of one particular farmer who was trying to sell his cattle through the drought, and the trucks came to take them to market. But when they got there, the cattle were too poor. So they then left the farmer with his cattle. He then, only way I guess he saw out of it was to shoot all of his cattle. He shot his working dogs and then he turned the gun on himself. And that just broke my heart, that poor man didn't see another way out or have somewhere to turn to for help or to ask for help. And that was the main catalyst that that got me started on the journey that I've begun.
How did this operation begin? How small was it in the beginning?
It was tiny. We had two shipping containers. We had one of the local community in Chinchilla were wonderful. One of the businesses donated two shipping containers to us. And we put some wheelie bins at our local supermarkets and started collecting food, because that's what we were hearing, is that people couldn't afford food. You know, people were living on Weet-Bix and rice, and that was just wrong on every level to me, that the people who feed us are struggling to feed themselves. And yeah, so we had two shipping containers and we grew to seven shipping containers, and that was when my husband said no more.
What was it like? What sort of messages were you getting back from farming families when some of this help started arriving on their properties?
Oh, they were blown away. I'll always remember one, you know, we started out at the Mitchell community, and we went out there with, you know, some truckloads of hay, and we did a little day on one farmer's farm. And I'll always remember this young farmer. He was probably late 20s, maybe early 30s, and, you know, he came up and he was like, "Who are you? Why are you doing this for us?" And I'm like, "Well, we're just two people who care about you, and we want you to know that, you know, we need you and need you to keep doing what you're doing, and if we can support you, then we're here for you." And he just broke down in tears that some strangers would be willing to help him.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Changing Australia on Radio National Breakfast. My guest today is Natasha Johnston, the founder of Farm Angels. Natasha, even with good intentions, it can take a while to figure out what's the best way to deliver aid. For example, if you're bringing hampers into an area, that can affect the local supermarket if people aren't shopping there. What was it like navigating all of that for you?
Oh, it was, you know, it was a real learning curve. We learned pretty quickly because we set ourselves up on a Facebook page, and that was how we started. And we started getting people feeding us back, you know, saying, "Be careful taking all these goods into the local towns because you're hurting the local businesses." Mm. And we certainly didn't want to be impacting the local businesses, and we quickly understood how much that impacts them. So that was when we actually came up with the idea of, well, we actually did local store vouchers to begin with, like buying, you know, vouchers at the local shops, and then found out that they weren't getting used because our farmers were too proud. You know, if they went and handed that voucher over, they knew it was from a charity. And so then we switched to prepaid visas, and it lets our farmers keep their dignity. And you know, they go in, you press swipe credit, and nobody knows where those funds have come from. Mm.
What's the scale of Farm Angels now?
Oh, we are, we've got two offices now, one in Chinchilla, one in Brisbane, but we support farmers across the entire country. So we've helped over 5,000 farmers across the country to date. We have an income of around about that $3 million a year, and supporting farmers across the whole country. We've been busy with drought last year in South Australia, and now we've had the floods in North Queensland and the fires in Victoria. So we've started the year this year very busy.
It never ends. From a political perspective, if you had a policy wish list, what do you think government could do better to fill some of the gaps as well?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think our farmers could do with discount on things. You know, the old saying is our farmers buy everything at retail but sell everything at wholesale. So our farmers need a lot more support in that space.
Natasha, best wishes. Unfortunately, you're not going to go out of charity business with the amount of natural disasters that we are constantly dealing with. It's such important work, and it sounds like it's been an extraordinary journey for you and for those that have been a part of this as well. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me. I think, you know, everybody needs a farmer a minimum three times a day, so make sure you support our farmers wherever you can.
Natasha, thanks to you. Natasha Johnston is the founder and director of Farm Angels, my guest today on Changing Australia. And some tough parts of that conversation, if it's raised any concerns for you, you can call Lifeline. They are there for you. It's 13 11 14. And if you're interested in getting in touch with Farm Angels, you can do that via their website, or also give you their number. The number for Farm Angels is 1300 196 488.
RN Breakfast host Sally Sarah, finishing her conversation with Farm Angels founder Natasha Johnston. That's our first episode of the week. Plenty of other news and stories coming up. Our producer today was Michael Commode. I'm Oliver Gordon. Thanks for listening to The Breakfast Wrap.